Hi, this is Jordan Moreno, and this is The Valley Now, your weekly feel-good hour where we lift each other up with the stories of good people doing good things in your neighborhood. Every week, we'll be talking with community leaders who have a unique passion for our thriving city and those that make The Valley such a special place to live. Get ready to be inspired by the work they're doing, whether it's mentoring our youth, providing a platform for those without one, or just driving those worthy charitable causes. Listen in on the conversations and join us in raising our community. This is our time to shine, and this is The Valley Now. Christopher Tiffany is the executive director of Raising Special Kids, a nonprofit organization which exists to improve the lives of children with a full range of disabilities and really to provide the tools necessary for the families to be the child's biggest advocate. And I think that's something that's really needed, something that seems so simple, but needed in our community. And I'm excited to learn more about these communities within our community that are emerging because of Raising Special Kids. So let's dive in. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Tell me about Raising Special Kids. How did it come to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, it really came to be by just a group of parents who were raising children with disabilities that found that there was real strength and real connection in understanding each other's journeys. So we like to use the adage, you know, it started around a kitchen table back in 1978, 1979, with a group of families. There was a partnership early on with our DES, the Department of Economic Security here in Arizona, to provide a little bit of funding for some training for parents and support coordinators. And that was really the birth of Raising Special Kids. And back then, we were actually known as Pilot Parents.
Okay.
So yes, that was the kind of the birth and the origin. And it grew from there. We continued serving and working with other parents and other family members. And, you know, there were different projects and federal partnerships that came on in the 80s and the 90s. And now we are a statewide provider of family support services. Everybody that works at Raising Special Kids is a parent or a family member of a child with a disability. And our mission and our goal is really to empower families with the information, training, and support that they need to be good advocates, and at the same time, provide that peer-to-peer emotional support piece that you only get from talking to somebody that has gone through the same experience.
Absolutely. And you and I had spoken previously about the way that community is so important. But when you're talking, I was thinking about in the 70s, when this kind of first all came together, the way that I think those with a disability of any kind were viewed, were treated, how they were even integrated into a classroom is so different than it is now. And it had to have been so isolating for those parents.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons that organizations like ours exist across the country is because children simply were not included in their education communities. Prior to 1975, when our national special education law was passed, you know, children that had physical, developmental, or emotional disabilities simply just were not in public school. They were not allowed there, or they were politely asked to not come back, whatever the case was. But the census of 1970 showed that there were about 1 million students that were just not in school because of disability. So things have changed quite a bit. At the same time, you know, I know that families are still struggling with inclusive practices and trying to get their child with a disability more fully included and integrated in their communities and their school communities and their faith communities and in just their neighborhood communities.
Mm-hmm. And you're working with a lot of these organizations, correct? I feel like there's Absolutely. So many elements that go into, you know, on the federal level, on the state level, yes. on the school level. What are some of those priorities that you all kind of have front of mind right now?
Sure. That's a great question. So our mission, strengthening families and systems of care to improve the lives of children with disabilities, is really a two-part mission. The first part being that individual family support piece where we talk with families on a daily basis to help them problem solve issues, to get them more connected to community resources, and to help them be effective advocates for their child. So that's the one side of our mission. The second side is strengthening systems of care. So we do have strong partnerships with the Department of Economic Security, our state Medicaid program Access, our Department of Education, the Department of, the Arizona Early Intervention Program.
All the acronyms.
Yes, all of the acronyms. And it is alphabet soup, you know. Yeah. It absolutely is. And that's just one piece of what we help families with is demystifying all of the letters that that come together and come really very fast at families when they're facing a new diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So in conjunction with the individual assistance and kind of parent training services that we offer, we do a great deal of work helping systems understand the family experience so that they can better serve those systems have been set up to serve.
Mm-hmm. And something that you told me emerged naturally, but also kind of why you exist, is that peer-to-peer support system. You have a program that is somewhat of a mentor program for parents who have been through it with those that are newly diagnosed. What do those meetings look like?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. We are a founding member of Parent-to-Parent USA, which is a national network, but we were one of the first organizations to kind of help design what parent-to-parent support looks like. And it's exactly what you said. It's a mentorship program. It is based in evidence. So I'll just maybe walk through an anecdote on what that looks like.
Yeah.
Something that I experienced in my first years with the organization as a family support specialist. We got a referral from one of the hospitals. It was either Phoenix Children's or it was maybe it was Banner. I'm not sure. But it was a referral from a doctor that had referred a young mother to be. So she hadn't yet had her child, but she did have the results of her amniocentesis back that showed that she was very likely carrying a child with Down syndrome. And the doctor referred her to us, and we were able to talk to her and get her in contact with a parent of a child with Down syndrome, so that the two of them could have the type of conversation that doctor, you know, probably couldn't have with that family. Professionals are absolutely a key source of information that families need, but they also need to talk to someone that's been there. So, you know, that young mother-to-be and our one of our parent mentors were able to talk about, you know, what are some of the likely medical things that are going to happen in the first few years of life? What are the community resources available? How can this young mother be prepared for the birth and the life of her child? And to my understanding, they still talk, but the model I think they still talk. But the model that we use is it's an 8-week peer-to-peer support model, and it operates under the kind of guidelines or structure of 4 contacts in an 8-week period. And then we evaluate that match. So when we get a referral or if somebody says, you know, I would really like to talk to some another parent, we typically match initially on disability. So if it's a parent of a child with Down syndrome, we'll match with Down syndrome or autism or cerebral palsy. That is one of the unique things about our organization is that we are not disability specific. So full range. But sometimes we cannot find that. And that's where the beauty of the national network really comes in. We're able to connect with, especially in the cases of rare genetic disorders, mm-hmm. we're able to connect with families in other states if we have to. So that's really, and we don't always have to match on disability. It certainly can be a child, families having difficulty with potty training. And though
don't
the
we all?
Right, right. Yeah. And though the disability may be different, the challenge is the same. So
I really, as I was cruising your website, enjoyed the, I just kind of started looking through the trainings and the workshops that are offered. And I'm thinking to myself that all parents could benefit from a lot of these workshops, the behavioral, you know, I've got a five-year-old whose energy is beyond this world. I have no idea how he has so much energy, but those sort of, you know, behavioral workshops and things like that, and having just more tools in your tool belt, I feel like, to navigate parenthood in general, but also to navigate parenthood with, you know, parenting a child with a disability, and such a wide range of workshops too.
Yes, absolutely. And so Jordan, everything that we do, we're open to the public. So if you would like to come, please do. And they are, you can find them on our website. Much of our trainings are still virtual, but we are doing in-person workshops too. Yes, so two things. We do have workshops that absolutely are available and really pertinent to all people. Positive behavior support is just the best practice. So that parent training is really, we partnered with Northern Arizona University to put that together to ensure that the that it was evidence-based and that it was family-friendly, and we were able to bring it to families in such a way that it really made sense, and they could walk away with really tangible tools and strategies to use right away. It is it's no substitute for working with a behavior specialist on a daily basis, but it absolutely is helpful. And then we have another set of trainings and workshops that really are more specific to navigating and understanding special education or protections and rights under the under 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, which is more accommodation. And So yes, our trainings are a big component of the support that we offer for families. And what we also find is that just getting a group of parents in a room together, they learn just as much from each other as they do from us who are facilitating the trainings and workshops.
What sort of responses do you get from parents? Like, do you ever listen as they're walking out, or do they come up to you? Because I feel like just having that kind of that net, that safety net beneath you of navigating all of the systems, what is available, what does this look like, and having just that safety net under you, I think would be so relaxing. Not relaxing, but it would put your mind at ease as a parent.
No, it really is. I think relaxing is actually a very good term. You can almost hear the sigh of relief over the phone when we're talking with a family and I explain to them that everybody at our organization is a parent of a child that has, walked this path and has had the opportunity to work with schools and work through conflicts, work with doctors and therapists. And there is conflict. One of the things that we like to tell families is that being assertive is different than being aggressive. And it does not have to be a fight, but there are times when we do have to assert our rights. It is our responsibility to do that.
As an advocate.
As an advocate. But getting back to your initial question, as a federally funded. So our organization has a lot of different partnerships and a lot of different projects and programs. But so we do evaluate everything that we do. As we evaluate the parent-to-parent connection, we also evaluate our training. We do some evaluation of our individual assistants. So we try to really explicitly provide opportunities for parents to tell us how we can do better. and what their experience was with us. And I will tell you that our parent trainings are very highly evaluated. And I think it's because the information is constantly being reviewed and revised. And it is also delivered by parents that have walked the same path.
Well, what is your story? What initially drew you to raising special kids?
Wow. Thank you for asking. We moved to Arizona in 2006, and I became a student of, I went back to school to become a teacher. And at the time I was looking at, I'm from Oregon originally. So our original plan was to come down here for a few years and then go back. In Oregon, it's a very, there's very strong teachers union, very difficult to get a teaching job in Oregon. So I went into special education. That was going to be my field because I knew that I would be able to make an easy transition back to my home state. And I had a brother that was on an IEP in the early 80s. So he was one of the first IDEA children, Individuals with Disabilities Act children. So he had an IEP. So I knew a little bit about special education. So I went in, started my master's program, and then got a job teaching special education while I was in my program. During that time, our son was diagnosed with autism. And so I continued to work for about another year and then found an opportunity where I could use my education and my experience as a special education teacher and as a parent to help other parents kind of understand and participate in the process and ultimately, be better advocates for their children. It just seemed to line up perfectly for me. So
how many years have you been with the organization?
So I have been with the organization. It will be 14 years in just a few weeks.
Oh, wow.
So I've held a few different roles with the organization. I started frontline family support. The organization's leadership at the time, they were looking, I believe, for someone that had the education background to manage our federal special education program, which is the Parent Training and Information Center. Every state has one. So they were looking for someone to come in, work with families, and then also be able to manage that federal grant. So I moved into different positions within the organization. And then when our former executive director stepped down, she really encouraged me to be an internal candidate. There was a executive search, and four interviews later, the board asked me to be the executive director. And it has been, that was 6 years ago. There has been a steep learning curve. We've done a lot of new things. There's been a lot of change, a lot of growth. But I'm just still excited to be at the organization and also humbled to be at the organization where I get to do this work every day. It's great. Yeah.
And so personal, you have such personal connection. I feel like it's a great fit.
It is.
What changes have you seen over that time, over 14 years, just in the landscape of those with disabilities?
Well, yeah, as I said earlier, a lot has changed. And also at the same time, not a lot has changed. So the, we have seen increased inclusive opportunities for students in classrooms. We've seen families be a little bit more effective in advocating for inclusive environments. We've also seen, the explosion of school choice options with the Empowerment Scholarship accounts, which, is good for some families. At the same time, it's a little bit of a controversial topic in the field, as it's largely funded from public school dollars. So, that has been a little bit challenging to navigate the two parts of our mission, right? The individual support and then also the strengthening systems. But we've seen language change around disability, and that, you know, that brings me to the 2-hour name, Raising Special Kids. You know, that the language of disability has changed over the last century, and it continues to change. And we've been looking at how our organization can change to come to be more current with the times. Mm-hmm. And we have been working for the last 2 years with a marketing and branding company to rename and rebrand the organization. So we're going to be looking at that coming up in the next 6 to 8 months.
Which is a huge undertaking.
It is. It's we've been working on it for 2 years. The board has been, our board of directors has been extremely supportive. We've done focus groups with youth with disabilities, also with our staff, with some of our community members. Our board did approve a new name, but we are not yet ready to publicly announce it. We're looking at new logo development. We are in talks with website designers. It has been a large amount of work over the last couple of years, all on the back end. Mm-hmm. So as I said earlier too, Raising Special Kids has been known by pilot parents. It's been known as pilot parent partnerships. It has been known as Raising Special Kids for the last 25 years. And that has just, it's been a good name for us, and it's helped us, really grow to what we are now. But it's time for a change. Everyone has agreed, most of our stakeholders at least, and we'll be moving forward with that shortly. And I wish I could announce it right now, but
no,
I'm not able to.
I wish I could have some breaking news.
Yeah. Breaking news, maybe next time.
Yeah, there you go, next time. Well, what else is in the future of the organization? I know the rebranding is huge, and that's going to be a huge undertaking, will continue to be. Anything on the program side?
On the program side, we've been engaged with really expanding a program called Positive Family Coaching. And this is an expansion to serve Medicaid eligible individuals with behavioral health conditions and disorders. So the organization grew up really in lockstep with our developmental disabilities state agency. And a large portion of the families we serve have children with autism, cerebral palsy, epilepsy, intellectual disability, those kind of qualifying conditions for services on the state side. What we have not traditionally, we've always served families of children with behavioral health needs. We have not had a program that has been really dedicated to that. So with some generous funding from one of our local foundations, we are currently in a 2-year expansion of those services to use a model that can build our supports and services in that area, and then also sustain it. So we have some seed money to really build and expand our organization through this program. And, you know, plans, we continue to serve families every day. That will always remain the same. The mission of family support always remains the same. And then our behavioral health expansion, and those are really the two main priorities.
And big priorities.
Very big priorities. We've, in this past year, we've been in a change cycle and a growth cycle, and it has not been easy. I know that the end of the school year this year, it was typically we have a 24 to 48 hour turnaround time to get back to families who are seeking services. So if we get a referral on a Wednesday morning, our commitment has always been that family gets a call back by Thursday at the very latest. Thursday, end of the day, end of the business day, Thursday.
Yeah.
During this, and the end of the school year is always a very heavy time. But I will say the months of April and May were difficult. We were not able to maintain that timeline turnaround, and we brought in some contract staff to help us out. We did a lot of different things, some former staff members to come in and work on a contract basis.
Wow.
to just help with the workload. But it was really a kind of a perfect storm this year, as we have been expanding and going through change. So we are ensuring that won't happen again next year, and making sure that we have the capacity to handle that in the future.
Yeah. Well, what's one piece of information, one thing or idea that you'd like to leave listeners with about those with disabilities and about raising special kids?
Yeah, that's a great question. It reminds me, we have a former board member. His name is Chuck Smith, and he is just a wonderful advocate for his daughter. And he was actually a board member prior to me coming on several years ago, late 90s, I think. But he stayed connected to the organization, and his daughter, Karen, was the board president that I first served under.
Oh, cool.
And one of the things that he shares is that, my daughter doesn't have special needs. She has the same needs as all children. She needs to be loved. She needs to be educated. She needs to be fed. He kind of goes through this. And, I think that is just such a nice takeaway that while children with disabilities might need accommodations and they might need some extra support, they are children first. They need the same things that all kids need.
Yeah. And I think generally, and I think you're the expert here, so that's why I'm just asking as a side note, are we moving away as a community from the term special needs?
That's a great question. What we've been leaning into is the term disability. Has a disability, with a disability. There's some discussion between that. And disability is important because it, especially in adulthood, it allows for that individual to be able to go to their employer and say, hey, I need a special desk because I have a disability, right? And so they're able to obtain the protections that are guaranteed to them. If they go to their employer and say, I'm differently abled, that's not going to trigger the same type of response from an employer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on an individual basis, we believe that it's the person's preference, or it's the family's preference. We don't get into trying to teach people the correct language. Certainly if it's disparaging language, we will, right. but special needs, differently able, there's a lot of different ways to say it. Mm-hmm. We have been recently using just the term disability. Sometimes right. folks will lean into the actual diagnosis name. I have a child with autism. But again, the why behind it, in adulthood, it becomes important to call it what it is that draws a direct line to federal protections and for that individual.
Well, thank you, because I like to be self-aware, but I think that it's important sometimes just for audiences and communities to hear from the experts of what is kind of a best practice. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And I appreciate you asking. If you asked five other people that were experts, they might give you five different answers.
Might be true, but yes. I'm asking you.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for the work that you're doing with Raising Special Kids. Where can folks learn more?
Yes, raisingspecialkids.org is our website. They can go on there. There is a mechanism to self-refer if there's a parent or a family member that wants to reach out, or if they're dealing with an issue that they'd like some support with, or to get connected with a parent mentor. RaisingSpecialKids.org is probably the best first step. Find our phone number on there and an online referral mechanism as well.
Perfect. And thank you for joining me.
Yes. Thank you so much, Jordan, for doing this. I really appreciate it.
All right. I want to give a very special thank you to my guests today. And I want to thank you for being a part of the program and making our community an amazing place, not just to live and to work, but most importantly, to play. You can hear The Valley Now on the radio with audio on demand on radio station websites and the Odyssey app. My name is Jordan Moreno. Shine your light, share your love, and join us again next week right here on The Valley Now.